Morning, Ireland. It's 12 minutes past eight, and joining me now is Taoiseach Leo Varadkar. Fine Gael meeting here at the Strand Hotel in Limerick, with the Dáil resuming next week, with the budget just weeks away, local and European elections coming up in 2024, and a general election not long after. Taoiseach, a very good morning to you.
Morning, and welcome to Limerick.
Thank you very much. Limerick very wet today, but anyway, scale of the tax package in the upcoming budget. It's really not going to be at 1.1 billion, is it? Much more than last year's tax breaks. We've heard about USC cuts. We've heard about widening the tax bands, a higher entry point on the top rate of tax. You've spoken about that quite a lot. But within that kind of 1.1 billion tax envelope, what's your priority?
Well, first of all, really glad to be here in Limerick for the next couple of days, meeting with my parliamentary party today, our councillors tomorrow, and very much setting our plans and objectives for the term ahead. And of course, very high on the agenda is going to be the budget. The budget is going to be about three things. First of all, helping families with the very high cost of living that people are experiencing at the moment. Also helping businesses, small businesses in particular, with rising costs. And then also a focus on child poverty and well-being, making sure that every child has a good start in life.
And I'll come on to all of those, but just on the tax thing, because you've made great play throughout your political career of tax cutting and the importance of that to you and to Fine Gael. So between USC, wider tax bands, higher entry point, roughly a 1.1 billion package, maybe a bit more. What's your focus priority?
Yeah, so the tax package isn't decided yet. It'll be of a scale similar to last year, as you said, a net package of 1.1 billion. The most important thing for us is that people don't have to pay as much tax, that we reward work, and that people are allowed to keep more of their own hard-earned money. So if you think about it, a lot of people wouldn't know this, but we actually started as a party in government cutting both income tax and USC back in 2014. Michael Noonan's budgets, Pascal Donoghue's budgets. Somebody earning 40,000 or more today pays about 3,000 less in tax than they did in 2014. That's the difference of having Fine Gael in government.
They're paying a lot more on the cost on the cost of living. In a way, though, you're going with that kind of the range of breaks, aren't you? It's something for everyone in the audience, is it?
I think the package has to benefit everyone. So yes, there'll be a tax package, and that will help people who are at work in particular. There will also be a welfare package, because we need to increase pensions and weekly payments for carers, people with disabilities,
and
lone parents.
And you went up, what, €12 a week last year. You could go up to 15 again this year. But again, the question is, between spreading it around or focusing and maybe making more of a difference to an issue you said matters so much to you, like child poverty.
I think there's enough scope in the budget between both the tax package and a very substantial spending package to do a lot of things. I've never been of the view that the budget should only be about one thing or one priority or one group in society. It is your spending plan for the entire year. And I don't think it'd be right to say that we're only going to focus on one group in society and everyone else gets nothing for a year. I don't think that'd be fair. So it will be broad-based, but there will, of course, be targeted measures for people who are the most vulnerable. And one of the areas that we want to work on as well is reducing some of the costs that government has a lot of influence over. So last year, we reduced the cost of childcare, for example, for all parents, but particularly for more vulnerable parents. We want to do that again. And also, for example, reducing the cost of putting a child or young adult through college. And again, we'd like to see more progress there.
Right. The interest rates, they were hiked for the 10th time yesterday by the ECB. Now, many borrowers, they may be paying less taxes, you say, under Fine Gael, but they're certainly paying hundreds more now in their mortgage repayments than they were at the start of this cycle. Sinn Féin, some in Fianna Fáil, even you've spoken a bit from time to time on the case for mortgage interest relief. Did yesterday's hike kind of, you know, copper fasten the case for mortgage interest relief in the budget, or are you persuaded by the argument that it's a fundamentally unfair break for property owners?
I think yesterday's hike was unwelcome. The ECB is independent in its actions, and I do understand why they're doing it. They're doing it to bring inflation down and restore price stability, and that benefits everyone. But I also know the experience that many people are having, you know, 10 letters in the post now telling you that your mortgage is going to go up. It's not unusual for people.
And that can be thousands more in the year.
Yeah, it could be hundreds a month and therefore many thousands a year. And that's really impacting on people who have trackers in particular, or people who have had their variable rate increased. And we get that. I understand that.
So do you accept the case then for mortgage interest relief?
We haven't made any decision on that yet. But I think if we do anything around mortgage interest, I think it really has to be targeted. what the central bank has done in the past 20 years is stress test mortgages. You know, nobody can borrow more than 3 or 4 times their income anymore. That was done for a particular reason, to make sure that if interest rates did go up, that they would be able to afford those mortgages.
Which means it's harder and harder to get mortgages for the people who are out there looking for homes. We're in a vicious circle here. The other question about the budget, I suppose, that this leads on to is, you know, this key issue of housing. Holly Cairns yesterday, the opposition saying regularly, you guys, you've had 13 years, generation rent, what are you doing for them? What about the 12,847 now homeless? What are you doing for them? Will any of them be better off on account of this budget?
I think one of the things we're doing, and this is the most important thing, is building a lot more houses. Just a cabinet this week, Minister Dara Brown brought a memo to cabinet showing that we anticipate that we'll exceed our housing targets for this year. More than 3,000 new homes being built, or 30,000 new homes being built this year. That doesn't include student accommodation or derelict houses brought back into use. So
many of them built to rent at enormous rents.
I think the only way that we can get on top of the housing crisis is through increased supply. It won't fix the problem on its own. But we do need to increase supply, and we're seeing some real progress in that regard. And the other area, which is really important for me and for my party, is home ownership. You know, roughly 400 people now, people, couples every week buying their first home. Haven't seen that since the Celtic Tiger era. And again, we're keen to help them and make sure that home ownership becomes a reality for more people.
Before I move on from the budget, one of the criticisms that was made after the last election within Fine Gael was that the budgets your party brought in before the 2020 election, that they were too prudent, that they hadn't been vote winning enough. Will you make the same mistake again, or are you more worried about auction politics?
I never agreed with that criticism. What we did in the run up to the last election was the right thing. We balanced the books. A very small surplus.
And you could have got more thanks from the voters maybe if you'd done more. Do you bear that in mind in this budget?
I think if we had had more generous budgets before the last election, it would have required funding, spending and tax cuts through borrowing. We're not in that position now. Thankfully, because we've made the right decisions down the years, our economy is extremely strong. We're going to have substantial surpluses and we're not going to spend them all. We could, but we're not going to. We're going to use a very large part of the surplus to pay down the debt and to set aside for future pension liabilities and also for future infrastructure costs. And I think there is a market out there. I think there are a lot of people who are voters who actually do understand that that long-term thinking is in their interest.
I want to move on to the North now, and there's been the open clash of words with Northern Ireland Secretary Chris Heaton-Harris over what he called with your unhelpful comment that you believed you'd see a united Ireland in your lifetime. Now, the question is this. You're well experienced by now. You know the scale of unionist hostility towards you on occasion. You knew the peace conference and the big, you know, announcements and meetings were going on this week. So why did you say that? Were you trying to, if you like, point out to the DUP and to London that if they don't do a bit more in terms of working the Good Friday Agreement, that train could leave the station and something else could come along?
Look, I think as is often the case when it comes to politics, people read too much into it. It's something I have said before on multiple occasions, and it was in response to a particular question. But
are you sending that message to London and the DUP? It's time to work the Good Friday Agreement or else something else will take its place?
I'd ask this question. Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister, describes himself as a proud unionist. He has been appointed by himself as Minister for the Union. Liz Truss did something similar. So did Boris Johnson. The Secretary of State often talks about how committed he is to the Union. Not only do we accept that, we respect it. Why is there a double standard applied to Irish politicians when we say what's in our Constitution, that we'd like to see united Ireland and work towards it?
And do you think saying that was actually news to anyone north of the border?
I don't think it should be. I heard the Secretary of State talking about the word helpful and helpfulness. I think we as a government have been extremely helpful to the British government since the Brexit journey began. Under my leadership as Taoiseach, we've negotiated 3 agreements with the British government. The backstop, the protocol, when they couldn't honour that agreement, we were the adults in the room and we negotiated the Windsor framework. And we'd like
and
to see that
And there were high
now.
Hopes of a reset, weren't there, in Dublin when Rishi Sunak took over? But we're still no closer to the return of power sharing in the north, it seems. So what's the alternative from your point of view in Dublin?
Well, you know, what's happened, I think, by the way, there has been a reset. relations are much better than they were under previous
administrations. But not what you'd hoped for, has it?
Not to the extent I would hope for. And what I've said to Prime Minister Sunak, what I'll be saying to him again in a few weeks' time, is that we understand and we're very glad that the Windsor framework was agreed and is being implemented. But that's, you know, 6-9 months ago now. And since then, what's happened is there have been negotiations really only involving the UK and one of the parties in Northern Ireland, the DUP. The other four parties that represent nearly 70% of opinion in Northern Ireland haven't really been involved in that, nor have we. So we hope the UK government and the DUP government are successful in their negotiations. We're willing to help in that regard because we want the executive to be up and running. We want it to be a success.
And if not?
But there does come a point. There does come a point where these talks between the UK government and the DUP can't be ongoing forever and can't exclude others forever. And we do need to sit down at some point and talk about what alternative arrangements can be put in place within the confines of the Good Friday Agreement.
And how close are we to that point?
Well, you know, I've had meetings with Prime Minister Sunak and we've talked about timelines in that regard. And I've kind of made it clear that I'm not going to put a hard deadline on this. And it's not my position to do so. But I think everyone understands, and certainly if you talk to the other parties in Northern Ireland, they do understand that this can't go on forever and we need to make plans. People in Northern Ireland voted in the Assembly election. They want devolved government and they want full democracy.
A couple of other issues. Let's move on to RTE now. You said yesterday there's no pressure on RTE to sell the rest of its land at Montrose. It's probably not worth the half a billion that some politicians were estimating at the media committee this week. So then the question is, how will any plan and the new DG, Kevin Backhurst, Director General, he's bringing forward a cost-cutting plan in October before the budget where government will be asked for a bailout for RTE. So if they're not selling the land, how does any cost-cutting plan not result in cutting the service to the audience and the conditions, if not the jobs of staff?
Well, I think there's two elements of this. There's the additional money that RTE will need for this year in order to keep going. And I think in fairness to the new DG, he's had a good start. He's made some difficult decisions, which will help to close that gap. And we'll make a decision in the next few weeks, certainly long before the end of the year, as to what that additional finance will be. And then there's the more longer term issues to how we fund public service broadcasting and not just RTE.
I'll come on to the funding in a minute, but politicians have made it clear there have to be cuts, there has to be reform before there's going to be any money coming from government. Kevin Backhurst said the other day at the committee he doesn't believe the government would accept compulsory redundancies at RTE. Do you agree?
I do agree.
Grant, would you fund a voluntary redundancy package because RTE doesn't have the money for that at the moment?
A voluntary redundancy package is only worth funding if it results in long-term savings. And we have seen that across other public bodies where the number of staff has been reduced. But that only works if the total number of employees goes down. What you can't have is a voluntary redundancy package and then have those positions back filled because there's then no saving. But that's a very detailed area and that's the kind of thing we'll have to get into.
And just one other thing in terms of the principle of the whole thing before I come on to the funding. I mean, we've seen politicians, you know, react in the past against cost-cutting plans like the closure of Lyric, or we saw the furore over GAA Go, which was a fundraising and trying to expand broadcasting output measure. Again, the chair, Shuni Rahali, the director general, Kevin Backhurst, telling the committee the other day, whatever plan for RTE's future is put before politicians, it will involve unpopular decisions. Now, this time around, if unpopular decisions have to be made, will RTE have government's backing?
Look, it depends what the decisions are. I've seen many times government state agencies or state-owned enterprises putting up proposals, you know, the classic Asgard list, you know, putting up proposals that are designed to be unpopular.
So you think there's a bit of negotiation going on there?
Well, I think there will have to be some discussions. And what we've asked is that the RTE board and executive team put together a plan and we'll look at that plan and we'll see if we can work on it. But one thing I do want to say, I think this is very important. RTE is going through a very turbulent time at the moment. I believe we need RTE. I believe we need a strong RTE, particularly when it comes to news and public service broadcasting that it's engaged in. We're a small country. Democracies are under threat all over the world.
And a lot of elections coming up, yes.
Yeah,
but the media, of course, argue that there's a range of media providing public service broadcasting.
Yeah, and I think whatever future arrangements we have, whatever we do with the licence fee, it can't just be for RTE. There has to be an element of other aspects of the media receiving funding.
And briefly on that, Eamon Ryan saying earlier in the programme to Mary, he's in favour of a household media charge being collected by revenue, the decision to be made within the next couple of months, he said. Do you agree?
Well, we have to make a decision on long-term funding. I believe we can make that in the next few months, legislate for it next year, and then have it in place by 2025.
You're losing a number of high-profile party TDs, the latest, of course, Richard Bruton saying he wouldn't be running again. How many more do you expect won't be running again?
I don't know the exact number, but it'll certainly be a couple more.
Paul Keogh, Bernard Durkin, have they indicated to you what they're doing?
I'm not going to get into any individuals. You know, I have a very good relationship with my parliamentary party, and part of that is based on confidence and things being confidential, and anybody who's going to make an announcement will make it at a time of their choosing. But, you know, I would say this. Most politicians, most TDs don't actually get to retire. Most lose their seats after one or two terms.
Careers end in failure.
Fine Gael is different. We have a huge number of politicians who've been electorally successful for a very long time.
Okay.
They've served 4, 5, 6 years in the Dáil, been in government, been in opposition, achieved a lot, and very often want to move on.
And some of the people who were closest to you who've decided to part the scene, others have pointed out. I was struck by one thing Richard Bruton said, because he's always been a politician who's been so, you know, concerned with policy and, you know, known as a policy wonk. And he said, politics is about emotion. What if the feeling that people have looking at Fine Gael after 13 years as government is kind of, God, you've had your chance, time to move on?
Look, I'm sure there's some people who think that. I'd posit a different argument. Over the past 13 years, Fine Gael has led the country through some of the most turbulent times and some of the most challenging times. We took over the country when we'd mass unemployment, restored the country's sovereignty, brought us from austerity to prosperity, brought us through Brexit with no hard border.
Which is all on the credit account, but anything on the debit account, somebody, particularly a younger voter, can look at it and say, well, that's down to Fine Gael, and if I'm fed up with that and I want, you know, to see if somebody else can do better, that's the way to go on there. You know, in fact, one of the biggest calls you're going to have to make now is the timing of the general election, isn't it? October or March 25, October 24 or March 25. Have you... thought about it a lot.
Just to finish, I have and I haven't made a decision on it, and obviously I have to talk to the other party leaders about that too. But to answer your question, I think what we're going to see over the next couple of years is even more change. Change is happening now at a breakneck pace, and there's going to be more surprises. Just in the last couple of years, hyperinflation, the war in Ukraine, the pandemic, things nobody predicted. Who do you want to lead you through those changes and that turbulence? People in a party that have experience in dealing with a national crisis, or a whole new government, none of whom have ever managed a big budget, none of whom have ever had to manage large numbers of staff, none of whom have ever had to lead the country
Same
through
was
a national
true of
crisis.
You once.
It was, but we had experience. You know, in the first government I served in, we had Michael Noonan and Enda Kenny.
Okay,
I don't think it'd be a good
October
thing for
October or March 25?
Look, that decision isn't made yet, but the next elections that we're going to face into are the local European elections in the summer.
Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, thank you very much indeed for joining us here at our studio in Limerick. The time now is 8:30. We'll have the headlines after this break.